contents and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul, seal your doom tonight.
Hail Satan, everyone. This is the HBO Boys podcast. The year is one. And I'm James, and with me today, it's a newcomer named Adam. Not the other Adam. This is a new Adam. Hey, new Adam.
Hey, happy to be here. New Adam reporting for duty.
I have Adam on here because we are both fans of not just the genre of horror film, the demonic possession genre, but fans of the Conjuring verse. Would you say that, Adam?
Yeah, and Satan in general. Absolutely. Both Conjureverse, horror, and Satan in general.
At this point, the series is a pretty mixed bag. The Conjuring 1, pretty good. Conjuring 2, not as good. Solid. And then it's like all been downhill from there.
I would agree. And after letting this most recent entry sit for a little while, you know, I'm kind of seeing this is a straight up hit job on Satan.
Yeah, and he doesn't get a lot of good press generally, and they really just did him dirty again in this movie.
I know, unbelievable.
Just very quickly, let's talk about the Conjuring movies, because there are a pretty big number of them now.
It's true, and I don't know. You know, there is a bunch of them, and I think it's fair as we're doing this too that we can just kind of say the ones that you know, maybe more or less in our opinion, that could be ignored or treated as if they didn't exist.
The premise of this whole series is that it's based off of the real life cases of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were real people. They didn't necessarily do the things portrayed in these movies, but they were real paranormal investigators or demonologists, as Lorraine would put it. And so you have The Conjuring, which we said was okay. After that, you actually had the Annabelle standalone movie, which is complete fiction. There is an Annabelle doll in their museum, but the backstory they gave it in that movie, they just came up with. I didn't really like it that much.
So that's interesting. I actually thought, and I believe you are correct, but I actually thought that some of the Annabelle history there, well, I'm not going to say it's true, but I believe that the Warrens did make it up ahead of time before the scripted film.
Okay, because as I understood it, like, Annabelle was just a Raggedy Ann doll that some girls had that, like, was evil until they turned it over to the Warrens. But in the Annabelle films, they make this really rich backstory of, like, this father's daughter died, and so he tried to make a doll to bring her back to life. It's been a while.
Well, that's what I couldn't answer, though, was that story made by the Warrens ahead of time, then adapted, or was that fresh for the script? I could not quite figure that out, because there's a little retconning going on. Not by the Warrens, but by the production staff and the people who were driving kind of the vehicle of the film.
And so, after Annabelle is The Conjuring 2, which again, it's not as good as the original The Conjuring, but it's alright. I still enjoyed it. After that is where it really goes off the rails. Annabelle Creation is even worse than the first Annabelle. This is like, oh, forget the first backstory. She had a backstory even before then. The Nun, pretty lame. The Curse of La Llorona, probably the worst.
It was rough.
Those three, have you seen any of those?
I did. I've seen all of them at this point.
And so the spinoff ones are much weaker, but they also don't have James Wan involved. And it might be that he directed the first one, which was pretty good, and then he directed The Conjuring 2, and those are like kind of the good ones, but he farms out the spinoffs to lesser directors.
I think that's a wise move on James Wan's part. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you've got a fairly solid building reputation, and you you know, maybe you're in a contract deal, and farm it out, and don't put it on your IMDb, you know?
That's true. Save yourself for the good scripts.
Yeah, because we don't know. You know what's going on behind the scenes there as far as, well, you know, now I got to make five of these, or at least have five of them made.
After The Curse of La Llorona, which is the worst one, or sorry, I think when there's two L's in Spanish, it's a ya sound. Curse of La Llorona.
I liked it the way you said it first, though, you know, just my taste.
After that comes either The Conjuring 3 or Annabelle 3 or kind of both. Annabelle Comes Home, which, not James Wan, but probably my favorite after The Conjuring 2. It is just kind of like The Conjuring does Child's Play. We're like, oh, Annabelle's loose in the museum. What? It's like The Conjuring X Night at the Museum X Annabelle Child's Play.
It had some touching moments, though. You know, it had some very it's very touching moments from a horror perspective. I found myself jumping once or twice, so I would agree with you that, you know, it was enjoyable to watch.
And that brings us to this one, which is either The Conjuring 3 or 4. And we had said just a minute ago that The Curse of La Llorona is the worst one, and then the director of that movie, Michael Chaves, came back to direct this one. This is not a James Wan joint. This is the La Llorona guy, which is probably why it's not very good.
Better than La... how are we saying? La Llorona?
Yeah, better than that one.
Better than La Llorona.
Better than The Nun.
Yep.
Better than probably Annabelle 1 and 2 as well. But not as good as The Conjuring or The Conjuring 2 by a pretty big degree, I would say. But yeah, okay. Michael Chaves, this is his second movie that he ever made. His first movie was pretty bad. I assume he's probably James Wan's high school friend who was like, can I make a Conjuring movie? Sure. Sure, Mike. Also, very quickly, I'd like to talk about Ed and Lorraine Warren. They come from our native state of Connecticut, and Lorraine Warren only just died a few years ago, whereas Ed died a few decades ago. And it seems to me, if you look at like interviews with the real Lorraine Warren, like she believes all of this shit. She's a very devout Christian. She believes in like spiritual warfare. It's well documented that Ed Warren was a charlatan and just like a snake oil salesman and was just doing this all for money. There's some guy, I think the guy who wrote either the Amityville Horror or the Haunting in Connecticut, the guy who wrote the original book, was like, you know, trying to interview Ed Warren for details about the haunting. He's like, it doesn't matter, man. Just write a good story. Write whatever you want.
Hey, you know what? I would like to say for the duration of this, I'd like to suspend our disbelief and assume, you know, just for fun, just for a few minutes, just while we do this, assume that some of these events may have happened to Lorraine Warren.
Right.
I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Well, and this story is kind of codified by the Massachusetts court system, which basically let this Arnie guy off with a slap on the wrist.
For murder.
Yeah.
We gotta end it with the for murder.
The movie begins with a cold open, and I kind of liked this cold. I liked the first act, you know, the first 30 minutes or so of this movie I thought was pretty good. The cold open is that the little boy with the Coke bottle glasses from Jerry Maguire is in the, you know, rural Massachusetts, and he's possessed by the devil, and Ed and Lorraine are calling for backup. They call their priest friend from the previous movies, whose name I did not catch, and they do this homage to The Exorcist when he rolls up in the taxi, and he's got his bag and his hat, and he's standing looking up at the exorcism house. And, I mean, I thought that, oh, this is more than just a callback. Maybe the priest is going to be extra important in this one. But no, it's just,
yeah.
It's just, remember The Exorcist?
But that is such a, yeah, I'm not going to harp on that, because if I start, I'm not going to stop. It's like, this is the way you introduce, like you said, an important character.
Right.
But then, okay, I wish we could just skip forward to what happens to him in about a minute of screen time later.
Right. Well, the thing is, and Father Marin's like such an iconic character, and that's such a good movie that really, like, you don't do yourself any service to call attention to a much better movie in your bad movie. And like the priest character in the Conjuring movies is like so lame and unimportant, and Father Marin's like one of the greatest horror movie characters of all time.
Yep, you know what? It's setting an ambitious goal, though. You know, this guy said, "I'm gonna outdo James. I'm gonna bring the Conjurers back to life."
Right.
And he believed it. He believed it like Lorraine believes.
And yeah, as you said, a minute later, like the demon's making shit fly around the house, and the priest just gets domed in the face by a porcelain dish, and it's just gone out.
I cracked up. If I was in a theater when I watched this, I would have audibly cracked up and definitely been shushed.
So the little boy's whole family is participating in The Exorcist, as is the little boy's like sister's boyfriend, like his brother-in-law, but not quite. Arnie. Arnie, who's one of the main characters. And as the possession's going really badly, like Lorraine is starting to see satanic visions. Lorraine, of course, if you haven't seen the other ones, she's like a psychic medium, that's her thing. Ed tries to continue with the exorcism, but like the demon, I don't know, astral projects and reaches into his heart and squeezes it and gives Ed a heart attack or something. He's like, I'll
This
stop your heart, old man.
is some real power creep, and I understand it. When you have a series of films featuring supernatural antagonists, every film you kind of feel like you got to up the ante, right? Like
Right.
a little bit, a little bit. This is some real power creep in the sense that this demon can literally now just stop human hearts.
Hey, you think, like, why did he just
Brilliant.
kill everyone in the room?
Yeah, he could have just swung for the fences.
Right. Based on what we know the demon's end goal is,
Yep.
brother-in-law Arnie grabs the little boy and he does something that always works in possession movies. He's like, "No, leave the boy, take me." And the demon's like, "Oh, deal." And he leaves the little boy and goes into Arnie. Ed's the only one who sees this happen, but then he has a heart attack and passes out. But like, Arnie knows this happened. It was his idea. And we'll come back to
I
that.
don't want to understate what a bro move this is, by our protagonist Arnie. I don't want to understate that. This is not like his child or
No.
his grandchild. He's like the boyfriend of the older sister.
Honestly, man, I guess he's a better man than me, 'cause my thought is like, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, no. Not would not be on my to-dos. I feel no shame in saying that I would immediately leave the house,
Right.
go home, hide under a blanket, and probably order myself some Domino's.
Text my girlfriend and be like, I think we should be friends.
Yeah, this isn't quite working out. I'm it's not you, it's Satan.
It's family issues. We then get the Star Wars title crawl sequence. All the Conjuring movies have them. It reads,
"The exorcism of 8-year-old David Gletzel was meant to end the months of torment, but for Arnie Johnson, it was just the beginning. The tragic events that followed made nationwide headlines and led Ed and Lorraine Warren to the most sinister discovery of their career, based on a true story."
I just got chills.
It is based on a true story, actually. Like this
It
one we
is.
know because there was a court case where they ran this devil defense.
Yeah, absolutely, confirmed. But I don't know.
All the other
It's
stuff that
a
Ed and Lorraine are
loose ball
doing
game.
probably did not happen because you'd think that would be a bigger headline.
Yeah, I also but I had by this time, by when we watched this, or when I watched it when it came out, I had not seen one of the previous films in which the cult that comes up later had been featured.
Oh, which one's that? The Cult of the Ram?
Yeah, that image, and then I looked that up to see if that was a real thing. I was curious, and it was kind of a mixed bag. It
Okay.
may actually
Some
have been a
truth to
real
it.
thing. Yeah,
Okay.
I wanted to bring that up real quick because there actually was a cult of the Ram.
But this was also, this one takes place in the 80s, which was like a period of great satanic panic in the United States, where everyone thought that, like, when your kids were playing Dungeons and Dragons, that was actually a satanic ritual, and everyone assumed that their kid's elementary school teacher was secretly a Satanist. And so, this was a good time for Arnie to run this defense. I just want.
So apparently in 1992, and this is Canada, this is not the US, this is Saskatchewan, a local woman, I guess in Saskatchewan, was running a babysitting service in a daycare center. And there was allegations of sexual abuse. And it turns out that there was more than a dozen people involved, and five police officers from three different police precincts, apparently, in Canada, faced over 100 charges connected with running a literal satanic cult called the Brotherhood of the Ram, which practiced ritualized abuse at a quote-unquote devil church.
Okay. And well, I'd be interested to look more into the facts of that because a lot of times, these things which have much more mundane explanations get spun into insane satanic stories in the press.
But... which is the end of the story. Oh. yeah, it concluded, there was a wrongful prosecution suit later on. And one of the five police officers who was falsely accused received like $1.3 million.
Wow.
So they pulled this and could it fit it under that umbrella of real events without, you know, kind of including that ending where it was absolute fake.
Because the original Satanic Panic story was like, it was like some The Crucible type shit where the school teacher got accused of like, you know, ritually abusing his elementary school class, like in the catacombs under the school and all this shit, which, and that got the media played into and just accepted it at face value. And like it drove the country insane. And then the investigators could not find proof of any of it. Like not only were all of the kids uninjured, but like, you know, the underground catacombs under which the satanic shit was supposed to be happening, like, just obviously did not exist.
Did yes, absolutely.
Even amateur sleuths were, like, using ground-penetrating radar, and they're like, yeah, there's nothing down there.
Exactly. In this particular case, the children who were being interviewed about, you know, these satanic cult were being actively praised for giving incriminating answers.
Right.
And the questions themselves were incredibly leading. So, you know, standard practice, but kind of interesting that they pulled in a fake investigation to kind of pull off the this happened with this whole Brotherhood of the Ram, and that's kind of where the influence came from, or the idea for it.
Yeah, in reality, these things are almost always just media sensationalism, which is why reality is not interesting.
True.
We want real devils and demons, all right? That would be an actual story, which is what Ed and Lorraine gave us. They took the boring and mundane, and they made it into a fun horror thing, which, you know, you can either just enjoy at its own terms or believe is real, and there are actual demons out there. And so don't go to the museum and taunt the Annabelle doll.
And help to get a person off of for a murder charge.
Yeah, help him beat a murder rap.
What? These are American heroes. I take back everything that, you know, I've thought about them.
So the story continues. Ed has a heart attack and he's knocked out for like the next 20 minutes. He's like in a coma for however many days. So we follow the story of Arnie for a bit. And as we mentioned before, Arnie ended the exorcism scene by saying, "Demon, come into me." But he does not do anything that a person in that situation you would think might. He's like, "Well, last thing that happened was I told the demon to possess me instead. Surely now the situation is resolved and I can go back to my normal life."
Yeah, you know, priest in the room, multiple paranormal investigators in the room.
Right.
No big deal.
So he's having a restless sleep, which he cannot be awoken from, where he's dreaming of satanic iconography. but eventually he does wake up, and his hot girlfriend, the sister of the possessed kid, apparently they work together on some animal shelter, and he's like, "Why don't we run away and get married?" It's like, dude, you're possessed by a demon. Deal with that first.
Now, I actually thought at this point, my first thought was, oh, the demon already has him and is like trying to convince this girl to run away with him. Right? I was like, oh, okay. This makes sense.
And she even asks him, she's like, "Arnie, are you okay?" I mean, he's like, "I'm fine. Don't worry. No problems."
Am I correct in remembering that he has not even mentioned that he has literally willingly taken an actual demon into his body to anyone at this point?
No, yeah, he doesn't say that until it's too late, until the cops pull. Ooh, convenient.
Yeah.
So as he goes about his day working, he continues to be haunted. He's haunted at lunch. He goes into the house alone. There's like a creepy peephole in one of the walls. He looks into it, and then when he looks out, there's a scary, she looks to me like a school marm, like a lady in a black dress, pencil thin, and she's making an angry face, and he spooks him, and he falls down.
Actually scary, though. I think that the this actress and you know, the art direction of the film actually made her pretty scary.
I like Julia as a villain, actually. And the actress that playing her is doing a good job, too.
Mm-hmm. I was creeped out.
We port very quickly back to the hospital. Ed is comatose. We have a sweet saccharine scene where Lorraine is like, let me tell you how Ed and I met and how much we love each other. And more so than the other two, it's really driven home that, like, Ed and Lorraine are good. Their marriage is strong. They're always right. And I honestly think that this is sort of an artifact of that, like, they were making the movies with input from Lorraine, and so there can never be any nuance to Ed and Lorraine. There can never be, like, oh, did we make the right decision? Because they don't want to make her look bad, basically.
Like, I can see someone making, you know, like, the production manager on the film kind of discussing the script, and James went talking about it. I can kind of see this conversation of, like, that's the bedrock of our films, of the Conjureverse, is that Ed and Lorraine are just perfect and just together, and their marriage is ideal. You know, I can see that kind of being treated as a highlight to some degree of, like, keeping a continuity of, like, feeling to the film.
Well, that's a good point. And these are also extremely Christian horror movies that maybe you could take your middle America, you know, you climb off your tractor and you take your 2.5 children to go see The Conjuring. And yes, it's spoopy and you're scared, but then at the end you're like, and see kids, and that's why we go to church 3 days a week.
Oh. Yeah, it's just like, kids, you know, your mother and I, we haven't always been perfect. And we're sorry about that. And, you know, our marriage has been rocky and we regret that you were exposed to that, so we thought we'd bring you to see the Conjuring films so that you could know what a good marriage looks like. A marriage based on fighting Satan. And that's a, you know, that could be a strong strong set of role models for Midwestern children to you know, get married by.
Ed eventually wakes up and he remembers apparently what Artie's not concerned with, that the demon went into him. And he's like, Lorraine, you have to call the cops on Arnie. Something horrible is surely going to happen. And I believe she does call the police and is like, listen, something terrible is about to happen. She's like a precog. You need to send them to Arnie's house because, like, a crime will be committed in the future.
She also identifies herself as noted paranormal investigator Lorraine Warren, as though that's, like, a benefit.
Right.
To a crank, potentially a crank call about a thing that might happen someday.
It's like, hey, Lou, who's on the phone? Right, it's noted demonologist Lorraine Warren. She says a demon's about to commit a murder.
Oh, we gotta get down there, Lou. Lorraine's never been wrong before.
So at the farmhouse, Artie is having, like, a demon acid trip. And I actually thought this scene was really good. Just the way it's shot. And in the background, they're playing that song from Zoolander, call me, anytime. But it gets, like, more insane and demonic as the scene goes on.
I agree. I think this was a genuinely well-shot, well-thought-out, well-art-directed scene. I have no complaints.
He's seeing, like, demonic visions of his friend, like, cucking him with his girlfriend, and then he sees his friend, like, turn into a demon, and so to protect his girlfriend, he has to, like, stab the demon to death again and again and again while his girlfriend says, no, no, you're killing our friend.
Yeah, suddenly 3 days after seeing his girlfriend's little brother twist his spine into a curlicue,
right.
This guy once again believes in demons.
Right. After thinking for days that it was fine, he's like, oh, actually, now I have to kill the next thing I see in case it's a demon. And so then we get the shot from the trailer, which I thought was kind of haunting, where it's like him walking down the street covered in blood. And the cops are like, hey, man, you okay? And they take him in without incident. The next scene is kind of interesting. They're at the lockup, the jail, where Arnie is awaiting sentencing. And they're having him do a test to read the Bible to see, because if you're possessed by a demon, you wouldn't be able to, is the logic. And he can, and so the demon must be out of him. At which point, Ed kind of hypothesizes the demon's MO. It's like, okay, He possesses somebody, he kills someone else, and then he moves on to a new host. And so at this point in the movie, I'm thinking, aha, the demon, now that it has successfully completed its murder ritual, has perhaps hopped in to Arnie's girlfriend, Debbie.
Right.
That went nowhere. I was wrong about that.
Same. Kind of right there in that boat here.
But don't worry, they tell Arnie, they're like, don't, Arnie, we're going to beat this rap by, we're going to put demons as evidence to show you how you're innocent. Which, again, an insane line of defense to take, and very bold of them to tell Arnie, like, don't worry, this is going to work.
You know, this might have been, this might have been one of those really nice spots in the film where you could have worked in a little bit of strife between the Warrens, you know, like, Ed is genuinely a little skeptical, maybe, of like, oh, did Arnie just murder this guy? You know, this doesn't fit what we think of as demons, and Lorraine could kind of be like, well, no, and Ed, you know, he's good, and definitely, did, you know, I thought that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure the real Ed Warren did not give a fuck one way or the other. He's like, this is a great story. Like, we are going to get so many visitors to our ghost museum because we're attached to this.
Like, I know it's true. I just, you know, all right, I'll be honest. I think paranormal stuff is very, very cool.
Me too.
It's personal. And yeah, and I wanted the Ed and Lorraine thing to be better than it really is. You know, like in real life, not this film. And
right.
I get sad every time I think about what I know to be true about Mr. Warren. By all accounts, I get very sad.
In the next scene, they're meeting with Arnie's lawyer, and she wants to plead guilty so as to not get Arnie the death penalty, which apparently they still had in Massachusetts in 1980. And she's explaining to them that their idea is insane, that if they plead not guilty with the defense that he was possessed by a demon, he will get the death penalty for sure. Also, ghosts and demons are not real. At which point, Ed and Lorraine are like, well, why don't you come to our house for dinner, and we'll introduce you to Annabelle. And then, you know,
name drop.
Hard cut to her being like, not guilty because of demonic possession. Like, womp womp. I thought that was funny. That was a silly joke.
Yes. Pretty good. Pretty good. I don't know. It didn't hit me as funny. It kind of hit me as like they were trying to be like a tense, dramatic moment, I guess. But you know.
Right. It also just shows off how awesome Ed and Lorraine are, and they can like truly make a believer out of anyone.
Yeah. Like we've got spiritual WMDs in our house. Okay, you want to see them?
And so obviously the DA decides to go for the death penalty. He's like, "Well, this is a slam dunk. I'm going to get Arnie in the gas chamber for sure." Like they're going with demonic possession.
God, I love killing kids. Ugh.
And so the lawyer is like, well, it's up to you now, Ed and Lorraine. Your idea was to do the demonic possession defense, and so you need to go out and collect evidence of demonic possession that we can show in court to get Arnie off. And I was like, why don't they just put Annabelle on the stand? Bring Annabelle into the courtroom and let her, you know, do some demonic shit in front of everyone. That should prove it.
It'd be a massacre. It'd be an absolute massacre. You know, if you want to kill everyone in that courtroom, James, you know, let her out of the cage. Didn't you watch the film?
Right.
Don't you know the documentary Annabelle? Annabelle comes home.
And so this is the task. They have to prove demons are real to get Arnie off, which is also the plot of a much better movie that I like a lot more, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Where, like, a priest is on trial for, like, criminal negligence because, like, he accidentally let the girl he was trying to exorcise die. And the defense comes up with a theory. It's like, oh, no, she died as a result of his successful exorcism. He was just trying to help her. And so the whole film is kind of tied around the trial. And, his lawyer isn't a believer. But, like, in investigating the case, she kind of comes around to what he's saying. It's a pretty good movie, and I thought they were going to basically ape it for this one and center everything around the trial, but actually, the trial does not make an appearance in this movie at all. We're done with that, basically, that plot line, which was disappointing to me.
Which it would have been a great, definitely would have been a great frame.
And it's something that really happened.
Yeah. Like, you could have
the rest of this probably
well. I honestly think there may have been a version where that did, like, an idea kind of the script where that happened, but then it got sort of stilted onto you. No, that's not enough Warren time.
Right. True. Yeah, because they're the moneymakers. People are here to see them, I think.
That's the way I see it, you know. Can't get enough Warrens.
So they begin the investigation. They're looking around the house, which leads us to a flashback of, like, David's possession. And again, here I got it wrong. I'm like, okay, so maybe the rest of the movie is going to be about David's story, told through flashbacks. But no, this is all we get of that. We see David getting possessed in a waterbed in an okay scene.
I thought it was kind of, you know, it was creepy visually. You know, the scariest thing ever, but it was kind of creepy visually. I had a waterbed when I was a kid. I got a little freaked out, I'll be honest.
The rest of the movie really belongs to Ed and Lorraine, and we are only, like, in the first act, but the next two acts, like, though they're longer, do not really take that much time to explain. Like, not really that much happens.
True.
So they find that there's, like, a satanic carved bone idol in the house, and so that is how the demon got to David, the little boy, originally. And through that, they're able to decide, like, oh, it's not actually, like, a true demonic possession in that sense. Like, this is a curse. Someone is directing this satanic energy at the family for whatever reason. Okay, so that is a little bit of a twist on the genre. I thought that was interesting.
I actually had a little trouble understanding, like, exactly what they meant at this point. I sort of didn't get, like, why the lady was appearing instead of just the demon. I was sort of, like, sketched out, but, you know, it is kind of a twist.
They're priests.
Although, I don't know. It'll explain.
Yeah, well, the rules are definitely not well explained. We'll get to that when we get to the end. But their priest friend hooks them up with a ex-priest who is, like, was a professional demon hunter. And he invites them into his creepy basement, which is full of haunted and demonic artifacts. And there's a funny exchange where Lorraine's like, no, Ed, I don't want to go down there. It's too spooky and evil. And it's like, Lorraine, you have a worse version of this at your own house.
Like, I think she honestly just didn't want a dick measure, you know?
Right.
You don't want to come up lacking. Meanwhile, WMD collection.
Ed's perusing the artifacts. Like, oh, how much you want for this? That looks pretty good.
this is some Pokemon card shit. You wouldn't believe it, dude. I've got a foil cursed idol here.
He warns them.
First edition.
He warns them that the Cult of the Ram are a dangerous group of Satanists that he hunted all his life, and that they, if anyone tries to interfere with their satanic works, it will put them on their radar and they will, you know, seek to destroy them. So look out, Ed and Lorraine.
Kind of interesting, though, because, like, then later on they're presented as having been hunted down and arrested, right?
Right. This is all interspersed with scenes of, like, Arnie still being possessed in jail. Which goes against what Ed said previously, which is that, like, oh, he's not actively possessed, that's why he can read the Bible, but he's still seeing demonic visions. And then we also see a vision of the villain of this movie, Julia, who we get a sense is, like, the leader of the Satanists or whatever. She's the woman in black, and Lorraine is seeing visions of her, too. We then go on this very long digression, where they want info on, I think, more or less what you just described, that police case with the Cult of the Ram, but they can't get it because it's official police business or whatever. And so I thought, you know, Lorraine and Ed go to meet a police detective. He's like, I'll only give you the evidence if you can prove you're psychic. And so he takes them to a crime scene where the Cult of the Ram murder happened. And then, let's just talk briefly. Lorraine is, like, totally OP in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Like, Super Saiyan level psychic.
Yeah, she goes from, like, having feelings and maybe a vision here or two to just, like, being able to, like, astral project and like, see the past as it happened. Like, her powers explode in this movie.
She has ascended.
And so he takes her to a crime scene, and she is, with her psychic powers, able to completely reconstruct the events of what happened, like Willem Dafoe in Boondock Saints. And she could just, like, sees everything as it happened, and she sees, like, this friend who has, like, a bone totem thing became possessed and killed her friend and then jumped off the cliff. And that's a break in the case because they didn't know where the murderer was. Oh, she jumped off the cliff and they found her, which makes the police detective trust Lorraine. And then he gives them what he has on the Cult of the Ram. Again, that scene, not super important. They could have just gotten that information from the priest character and we could have made more time developing like Arnie or developing Julia or whatever. Again, this movie's a bit too long and it spends a lot of time filleting the Warrens.
It does. This is true. And not in the right way. Not in the like, okay, it's like you could do it in service to the film. Like in a creepy way. Like you could start building the creepiness onto the Warrens. Like if truly like the Cult of the Ram starts stalking them in the film. You know what I'm saying? And like now we really have to deal with that more so than just what does occur between them and Julia. Like that would be kind of interesting. Like you could even do like, you know, one of these like part two type things for the movie, especially since you know you're going to have a digital release.
And again, it seems like maybe this went through some rewrites because like this doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Then they break into the morgue because they want to inspect the corpse of the murder-suicide girl that Lorraine just broke the case into. And so they break in. You'd think, like, already as a writer, you would have had the solution to that. The detective lets them in. But whatever. Yeah. They break in. Lorraine, using her newfound superpowers, is able to, like, hold hands with the corpse, which is a little bit gross because it's all soggy. And through that, she's able to find Julia. And this was actually one of the last scenes that I really liked, which was the confrontation here between like Lorraine and Julia, because she can see Julia, but that allows Julia to see her. And she's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, oh, my God has commanded me to stop you. And Julia's like, well, then your God has fucking killed you.
I did like that. I really enjoyed almost all of Julia's writing. She actually felt menacing.
She did, which is why I feel like they kind of wasted her. We'll get there. So Julia now knows who they are and their location. And again, talking about power scaling, Julia then animates just a random corpse in the morgue to attack them. Mm-hmm. And
like actual necromancy. Like this is a big change from anything that's ever happened in the Conjurers.
Right. And Ed is only able to save their lives because like he severs the spiritual connection. It's not clear. He pulls Lorraine's hand away from the corpse, which somehow depowers Julia and saves them at the last second from the zombie.
Yeah, it was kind of loose, a little loose there, kind of inventing its rules as it goes, but it kind of worked, you know? Like, Julia was only there because she was able to connect through Lorraine, I guess. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
So, at the Warren's house, the two of them, plus either their intern character, I forget what his deal is, are discussing what they should do about this, and they find out that the murder-suicide girl had went away on a little trip somewhere in Fairfield, Connecticut, and that's where she got that bone totem. And so Lorraine is on her way to see like the Satanist hunter guy, and they realize, oh shit, the Satanist hunter dude's house is in Fairfield, Connecticut. And so now it's a race that Ed has to, like, beat her there or get there in time because Lorraine's in danger now. And so Lorraine arrives there first, and Demon Hunter Dude gives her the backstory. He's like, yeah, my daughter Julia grew up in this house with me while I was hunting the Satanists, but, like, whoopsie, she got into my collection of Satan stuff, and it was too interesting, and it turned her into a super Satanist, and it's all my fault.
Okay, this is another part where I kind of cracked up, you know, like, you can't, you know, like, okay, kids assert themselves, they grow up, they want to do their own thing. Right. This guy couldn't stop someone from looting satanic artifacts and worshiping the literal devil as a priest and a father.
And this guy's a Satanist hunting exorcist.
who believes in this stuff. Like, I kind of wanted him to die. Like, immediately. Which, of course, paid off.
So, they then hear someone upstairs. Julia has gotten to the house before Ed. And so he tells Lorraine, like, run into the spooky catacombs underneath my house. You'll be safe there.
God. Yeah, run into the lair, okay? The wolf will never catch you.
Oh, but he also explains, like, so this is a demonic ritual. She needs to use the demon to take a soul, which will allow her to ascend to a higher plane of power if she does. And so that's why she's cast this curse. This was just a random family that she was attacking, and she just needs the demon to kill one person. Again, the demon has had tons of opportunities to kill numerous people and did not take them. When it had David possessed, they were basically all at its mercy. Could have killed a whole room of people then and just chose not to.
Now, this is where I got confused too, because I thought it was like they got to kill like three specific types of people. But then that becomes unclear later when it's like, oh no, it's just one soul.
Right.
Yeah, I got very confused at this point.
And like, also, did they not already get, because like Arnie killed that guy. So it's like mission accomplished.
Yeah. I guess it didn't get his soul though, which is like where I got confused.
Yeah.
It didn't. I don't know why. Also, okay, wait. If you like let a demon into your body, is that not giving up your soul?
You gave your soul already, yeah.
I guess it's not. It's kind of like, you know, you didn't really sign the permanent lease. You're just like, well, you can rent here.
So this leads to the action set piece that ends the movie. Julia comes in. She kills her dad. She goes into the catacombs to chase after Lorraine. If Lorraine can destroy Julia's satanic altar, which, again, in the catacombs, under Demon Hunter Dude's house, he knows that they're down there. He knows that you have to destroy the altar. Could have just gone.
Yeah, that guy's not doing anything. He's like, I am retired.
Right.
I am not a chance, buddy. Buccarino.
So she needs to search the catacombs to destroy the altar. She has a pretty, like, actually tense encounter with Julia where, like, she's trying to, like, stab. Like, she's on top of Lorraine trying to stab her. And then Lorraine is kind of like, their connection is still going, so she's able to see through Julia's eyes that there's a rock nearby that she can grab to strike Julia with, and she gets away. Ed shows up immediately possessed by Julia. Like,
Possessed or like confused by
glamoured
the
or something? Yeah,
I don't know, but that's also some kind of OP stuff going on here.
So now Ed is confused. He's like chasing Julia through the catacombs, like Jack at the end of The Shining. I think he has like a hammer or some shit. And he's trying to smash Lorraine, but Lorraine's like, no, Ed, remember our backstory. Our marriage, it's so strong. And he's like, oh my God, you're right. And he comes to his senses through the power of love.
Oh God. It's more powerful than any satanic powder, I'll have you know.
Oh yeah, we should also say, like, meanwhile, Arnie's, like, about to be killed by the demon or whatever. So, together they find the altar, and they destroy it, which saves Arnie. And then Julia arrives, and she's like, well, I could just have the demon kill one of you guys. At which point, and again, I don't think this was signposted at all, that there was a time limit to this shit, and it's up.
Yeah, well, I think it's like when it failed to kill Arnie or something.
Demon,
or like
the demon got impatient, or maybe.
The curse wasn't passed or something? I don't know.
So because she didn't get Arnie's soul, now it's too late. The demon takes her soul, which means just like snapping her neck. I guess
that's explained by it's like, oh, well, her soul is forfeit because she promised it if she didn't do her job.
Right. And again, like, that is a tidy way to defeat Juliet. Well, she kind of defeated herself, right? This is sort of like a Harry Potter ending where it's like the good guys never have to bloody their hands. The bad guys just kill themselves accidentally.
which is such an incredible, like, okay, I know that this is Warren fan service at this point, but, like, such an incredible way to introduce that sort of disparity if you're even setting up another film, which is, like, have Lorraine kill her.
Right.
Even, like, if it's, like, some kind of, like, you know...
Like, have Lorraine summon the Archangel way. Michael and have him kill her or something. Like, if that's where we're going with this.
This is... Yeah, this is basically Naruto now. Like, we just summon whatever we want.
But again, but yeah, I thought this was a waste. Julia, forget the nun. The nun is boring. Julia would have been a good, like, cross movie villain.
Yeah, like, that would have been crazy. Like, if they didn't get her, like, they got some lackey instead.
Yeah.
Because Julia felt really menacing. Like, she felt like a true opposite to the character that is Lorraine. Like, she was a true believer on the other side of the spectrum. Like, she wasn't doing this stuff, you know, just for necessarily ha-has. Like, she wanted power, but she also just loved Satan.
Yes.
You know, she was in it for the love of the game.
Right, in the same way that Julia is a devout believer. Or in the same way that Lorraine is a devout believer. Julia is just the other side. She's just, you know, she's just rooting for the other team.
Yeah, there was a beautiful kind of like yin and yang sense going on here that was absolutely beyond wasted.
Yeah. Yeah, Julia was my favorite thing about this movie. Too bad she didn't make it out.
Yeah, or, you know, I guess, but in this kind of film, you know, if you're going presumably to hell, which very much is kind of like an existent thing, and there's necromancy and stuff, it's actually not out of the line if they wanted to take it to the next level of supervillainry to have Julia come back, especially if they did get such a positive fan interaction with her.
Right. Yeah, here's hoping. So, we get to the end of the movie. The stress of the confrontation has Ed's had another heart attack, but Lorraine this time is there for him, I don't know, with like the nitroglycerin pills or whatever, and his heart attack stops. And
nitroglycerin?
So, yeah, they use that
too. Is that what does it?
They used to, yeah.
Interesting. I had no idea.
They take the bone totem. This is all in a montage. They put it in the museum next to Annabelle. Meet your new roommate. Arnie goes on trial, but he gets sentenced to a pittance of 5 years, you know, for aggravated manslaughter. So he doesn't even get hit with murder in the end. That happened in real life. In real life.
Yeah.
He got 5 years for involuntary manslaughter.
How did anything that they accomplished, like, I know it's sort of like the victory lap scenes, right? But how did anything they do actually prove the existence of demons? Like, right.
Because, like, Julia's dead
that.
And her dad is dead, so they don't even have a witness.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, now aren't you on trial for murder?
Right, yeah. And isn't that a bigger story? Like,
yeah, did Ed and Lorraine bury the bodies?
No, because the cops show up at the end of that. So it's
but they're, like, not suspicious. They're just like, oh, yeah.
That should be nationwide news. Noted psychic Lorraine Warren has duel to the death with Satanist woman in catacombs beneath Fairfield, Connecticut.
Real Ed would have been out there like billboarding that shit like a pay-per-view boxing fight. Like, see my wife kick Satanist ass. We got a VHS, folks, $5.
We get a happy Hollywood ending for the Warrens where he built her a little gazebo in the garden. I don't know if that's a callback to anything, but he builds her a gazebo in the garden and they make out. Their marriage is still so strong. And then over the credits, they play audio of the real little boy David's exorcism, which that was a nice touch, I actually thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, at this point, the movie's already pretty far gone for me, but I did like that.
Yeah. It was interesting, and feel free, you know, When you do your post magic, cut this out if you like. But since this is the HBO boys, the gazebo gave me weird Soprano vibes.
Oh,
you remember that? I don't know if you're
the universe is deeper than we thought.
Because I don't know if you remember that. I watched Sopranos recently, so maybe I'm just anywho, not interesting. Sorry, just came out of my mouth.
No, perhaps the Conjuring verse and the Sopranos, and the Sopranos is getting a prequel, by the way, so maybe they'll tie that in the 80s. He's like, Ed, Lorraine, I don't care about your stupid demon stories, so long as you keep bringing in that money, Ed.
Oh my god, like Tony Soprano's dad turns out possessed the entire time.
Or no, what happened is...
And Mom.
Tony committed the Amityville horror murders so that Ed could write a story about it.
Oh my god.
And they pinned it on the dad.
Oh my god, Illuminati confirmed.
So in the end, Adam, if you were going to give The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, a letter grade, what would it be?
A letter grade? Wait, can I do this? Can I give it a pentagrams grade?
Well, I don't know what that is, but sure.
All right, well, let's set a scale, okay? So, I mean, I think the natural is 666 pentagrams is the highest. So out of 666 pentagrams, I think that I would give this movie two grades. Overall as a horror film, I would give it 421 out of 666 pentagrams, which is a little bit better than the average for horror films that are coming out in 2021. It was watchable. I thought it brought some interesting things into the universe, and the villain was menacing. As an entry into the Conjureverse, maybe a little bit lower.
I kind of go the other way. I find it to be a stronger Conjureverse movie than the majority of them are now, right? Because now there are eight of them. But to me, at this time, and while the production rate on this movie was high, and that's one of the draws, in an age where we're getting really, like, auteur horror films by, like, Jordan Peele or Ari Aster or the guy who made The Witch and The Lighthouse, whose name escapes me.
But do you feel like that slowed a little bit? And yes, I know COVID slowed it down.
Yeah.
But... True. Okay, but no, I see where you're coming from.
I think the bar has been raised, and The Conjuring is still back in 2006. But
overall,
the genre has been raised.
Yes, definitely. Although those all, I don't want to go too deep into it, but I think those also constitute a sort of different kind of film. Those are really more of an auteur film. Like, they're more of a, I'm not going to say art house at all. Okay, in The Lighthouses. But, you know, this is a sort of a more of a mainstream feeling Hollywood release, which still hasn't really caught up horror-wise.
No, they haven't caught up horror-wise, but I think you should still have them. The Conjuring are the event movies. The event horror movies of the year now. When you and I were kids, it was the Saw movies. These days, and then for a while there, it was like The Grudge. And now it's The Conjuring, and we are better off now than we were. Like,
that is true.
The Saw movies are dog shit. The Grudge movies are also pretty bad. If these are the yearly event horror movies, we might not be in the promised land, but we're better off than we were.
Yeah, I'm not sad about that. One bit. Like I said, I thought it was like preeminently watchable. Like, yes, I did find myself kind of, I'll be completely honest, skipping forward a little bit through some of the lovey-dovey Lorraine and Ed content.
Right, like, we get it, They love each other.
Yeah. Okay. Like just a minute or two, though. You know, if I'm only skipping a minute or two of most Hollywood-released horror films at a time, then it's serviceable.
So, thank you for joining me, Adam. I'd like to have you back. You know, Ryan does not watch horror, so maybe you and I can be the horror movies that appear on HBO Max reviewers. And
I'd love that.
And we'll be back in 6 months to a year for sure with the next Conjuring verse movie.
Oh my god!
You know that La Llorona and Annabelle Comes Home came out like less than 2 months apart.
I did not know that. My brain kind of manually skipped them on release just based on the trailers. And I only watched them later. I did not know that.
And so, yeah, we'll be back with another horror movie sometime in the future. Ryan and I will be back later in the week to watch Loki, which I am truly not enjoying. Are you watching Loki, Adam?
I am not. I like to sort of wait a little bit. On most stuff, and then kind of catch it later and not when it's first rolling out. I don't have high hopes. I'll admit it, I'm not a Marvel fan.
Yeah, well, you can see this one then. And thank you, Adam, and we'll be back next time, hopefully. Actually, we can have the devil on the next show. We're trying to get in contact with him. Adam has put some things in the mix, see if he can reach the devil or one of his hirelings. For the next episode.
It's pretty tough, but I'm going for it. I'm swinging for the fences, you know? Stopping hearts. Oh, yes, you are. Devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are. Devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are.